Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 12, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn, Living with COVID. To me, the news of experts realizing that COVID-19 isn't going anywhere is good news. From the very beginning, I said that even if there is a vaccine or a drug that cures COVID, the virus will mutate or another bug will come along and render our efforts futile. As I have said probably hundreds of times since the beginning of the outbreak, trying to outsmart nature with technology will not work. We are products of nature, so trying to outsmart our producer is, to put it mildly, unwise. Personally, I am happy that this is the way nature is directing us. I am not at all happy that people are suffering, but they are not suffering because of nature, but because humanity is obstinate and insists on going where nature isn't going. When you bump your head against the wall of reality, you're bound to get a major headache. In the case of humanity, this headache manifests in millions of needless fatalities and countless people suffering from long-lasting symptoms because of our mulishness. Like it or not, COVID is telling us to slow down. The technological rat race we've been on has nearly devastated humanity, and we need to calm down and bring it under control. People need to stop fighting and start talking about what really matters, our relationships. Since we cannot communicate with each other positively in the physical realm, nature has shifted us to the virtual one. If we learn to communicate positively in that realm, we will see COVID easing its grip and letting us communicate with each other physically, too. Nature is using COVID to teach us that our real immune system is not in our bodies but in our hearts, in how we relate to one another and how we feel about each other. Since we are all connected, one person's ill will percolates to everyone else, and our negative emotions spread like viruses and sicken us. Positive emotions percolate and spread, as well, but those are desperately scarce, hence the pitiful state of humanity. The vaccines are helpful in keeping the pandemic at bay, but as long as we avoid making the necessary changes in our relations, the virus will keep returning in various forms and intensities until we realize that we need a more fundamental change than just a new vaccine. COVID is not a strain of flu. The way to remove it is not physical, but emotional. Only when we comprehend this, we will be able to heal ourselves, after we heal our malignant relationships. Then, we won't have to go on living with COVID. My new article on LinkedIn, The Power of the Force of Separation. These days, Jews are commemorating the 3 weeks. In the year 70 C, the Romans breached the walls of Jerusalem after a several months long siege. However, it took them 3 weeks of bloody battles to finally defeat the Jews, destroy the temple, and exile the residents of Judah from the land of Israel, thus ending Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel for the next 2 millennia. In those days, the Romans defeated the Jews mainly because of infighting among the Jews, and less thanks to the military superiority of the Romans. When Jews commemorate these days, they lament the unfounded hatred that had conquered their hearts and defeated their nation. Today, it is evident that the same force of separation that prevailed then still prevails now. We have been given the land back, but not thanks to our unity, but because of the world's pity on us, after the atrocities of the Holocaust. Yet, separation still rules our hearts, and unless we overcome it, it will destroy us, once again. The Jerusalem Talmud writes about it very clearly, Yom 1:1, any generation in which the temple is not built, it is as though in those days it was ruined, for it was not built due to unfounded hatred, which is as though it is ruined, as this was the reason for its ruin. These somber weeks, and especially their beginning on the 13th of the Hebrew month of Tammuz, when the Romans first breached the walls, and their conclusion, on the 9th of the Hebrew month of Av, when the second, and first, by the way, temple was ruined, should be days of introspection for us. Mere bewailing the ruin of the temple will not do us any good. Victimhood is a treacherous bait, and we must avoid it at all cost. We must take a proactive approach and reflect on the reason for its ruin, on our hatred for each other. Only if we realize that this was the cause of our downfall, we will be able to prevent its recurrence. Since the beginning of our exile after the ruin, we have adopted the attitude of the helpless victim. Yet, if you read what our sages, the spiritual leaders of our nation, wrote about the same events that we regard as calamities we could not avoid, you will find a very different viewpoint. Considering the ruin of the first temple, for example, which we attribute to the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar II, our sages actually attribute it to internal conflicts. The Babylonian Talmud, Yom 9b, describes the leaders of the Israelites in the following pejorative manner. Rabbi Elazar said, "Those people, who eat and drink with one another, stab each other with the daggers in their tongues." Thus, even though they were close to one another, they were filled with hatred for each other. The Talmud also emphasizes that the hatred was only among the leaders of the nation, while the majority of Israel did not hate one another. As we saw before, by the time of the ruin of the Second Temple, the hatred had spread to the entire nation, and we have not recovered from it since. Today, the force of separation still reigns supreme. One look at what is happening in Israeli politics immediately brings to mind the events leading to the ruin of the First Temple. In fact, some pundits have even found similarity to the events leading to the fall of the Second Temple. Since Israeli politics reflects the state of the Israeli society, currently, we have no reason for optimism. The bottom line is that we are treading the same ruinous path as our forefathers. If we do not veer off from hatred, we will find ourselves succumbing to yet another villain, who will be just like the rest of the villains that have tormented the people of Israel throughout the ages, a consequence of our own mutual malice. The nations look to us for leadership. And just as every IDF commander learns, one leads by example, and by nothing else. If we do not set an example of unity, the nations will revoke our right to this land. We think this land is undeniably ours, but it is ours only if we are Israel, united as one man with one heart. If we are like the rest of the nations, then we are not Israel and we have no right to sovereignty over this land. The forces of separation are gnawing at our ranks and weakening our power. We are strong only when we are united, because then we are Israel, a light unto nations. When we do not strive to love each other as ourselves, however difficult it may be, then we have no justification being regarded as Israel, and therefore no right to the land of Israel. New Life 1310. The reasons for losing the sense of closeness in the family.
Shalom lachem, toda shetem mitzarfim elenu.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, hello. Nita Mazoz, hello. Hello. And today, we'd like to talk about communication between siblings in a family with small children. We're parents, we have children, some smaller, some more grown up. But today, what we'd like to learn is how to use our home as a home laboratory to develop the ability of each of our children to communicate correctly with other people that they will meet all throughout life. Let's say that we're starting with children under the age of 10, and how do we build the communication between them? Nita, please. I think maybe we'll start from the end. The greatest contentment that a parent can have is when the children get along. Really, there's a feeling that we did the right thing, that we probably brought them up correctly. When the children know how to connect and support one another and love each other, and really, there's a feeling of together. But in order for that to happen, in some point in time, you have to start building that from early age. Another thing I'd like to add is, because what I said was probably true 150 years ago, and today too. What's added today actually is that parents or we, people who are aware of it, we're aware that the world is headed toward more connection, communication, and we do understand that a part of our role as parents is to build a kind of group, mini team out of them, that this will give them tools to better deal with life in the future. There's an added value here. And this is what we'd like to focus on today. So, first of all, how would you define good communication between siblings? I think that you can define it in simple terms, that it is a sense of family, a sense of siblings, a sense of support, a commitment that comes from nature, because we are brothers, siblings, and that we feel a connection and a commitment because this is what our parents are expecting of us, to behave in this way, that eventually in our world we have no closer people, more committed by nature than we are between us. Siblings, on the one hand. On the other hand, we learn, see, feel how many problems there are around us. Because where, on the one hand, there's closeness, blood ties, so to speak, that come from nature. Also, from nature, there's a kind of, or by nature, there's a kind of competition, rejection, envy. And here, we also have to work on our human nature in order to arrange all of these natural inclinations that by nature we're brothers, and in terms of corporeal nature, that we feel that we are in rejection, hate, that we're competing. And it's not a matter, and it's not the parents that didn't bring us up properly, but it's something that's rooted in us by nature, that there's both hate and love in our root, that this is probably something that comes to us from the structure of reality, from the structure of human society, that if there are two people, then between them, there is also a source of connection and a source for hate. Because eventually, all of us are human beings, and there's one root between us, which is Adam. And therefore, all of us are as if brothers. Only this root of ours is very far away from us, on the one hand. On the other hand, if we nonetheless take this into account, then from this root, we can build a new mankind, a new society. That the root, it exists one way or another. So, this is the question. This root, according to which we are siblings, under the same mother and father that raised us, brought us up, educated us, etc. This root, Is this route obligating? Does it obligate us on the one hand? On the other hand, is our natural distant route where all of us are human beings, literally in Hebrew meaning B'nai Adam, the sons of Adam, the sons of our ancient father Adam. And that doesn't compel us to anything. So we see that neither determines anything, neither of these. And it all depends on the measure to which we can develop the matter. Meaning, it's a matter of education. Previously, you mentioned that when children are born, they're born built in with the hate, competition, the ability to cooperate. There's a thing and it's opposite all the time. And, well, first of all, as a parent, you said, you cleared me of, you know, of blaming myself. You said that this is how they're born. Fine, that's good. So how do we work with this? Is this a kind of proficiency that a parent can acquire of how to correctly use all of these qualities and opposites that are built in a child? And therefore the question does it really depend on the parents? There could be a good interaction, good communication between brothers. To what extent is it dependent on the parents? Dr. Lightman, it depends on the environment. We see that the simpler the environment, the more primitive, natural it is, then there is a stronger connection between the house members, between parents and children, between siblings. And it happens in all times, in all nations, whereas if the family grows distant from its basis, foundation, and it no longer has the kind of connection like there were in ancient previous times, then the connection between them becomes blurred. Maybe it's not the people themselves, but society. And what follows is that we no longer feel committed to each other, that we're interdependent, and altogether, what is going on? My brother, he's of a different age, he goes to a different grade, he has friends of his own, and our parents treat him and me differently because society demands each to be treated differently, and we have nothing in common. Where we don't go out and milk cows or take care of the horses or chicken. We don't work together in our field, but each of us has his own games, his own group of friends. And so we don't feel the interdependence, our mutual commitment. And also when my parents tell me that you have to care for him, he's your brother, I don't feel that he's close to me. That the children that I play with outside or at school or wherever, that they're more important to me. I feel them more, I'm more with them. Meaning there is a serious distortion in our perception of reality, because once we were all around the house and the household and all that goes on there, and when you already reach the ages of 3, 4, 5, you already start working in the household, taking care of domestic animals, and work in the field and so on, we felt that we depend on it, that we're working together in a factory called our household, and that all of us have to make our own food and take care of what is going on. Suppose against different acts of nature, rain, things like that. Today I don't have that. Today we're not committed to each other. And therefore, that we're not so interdependent, then we also don't have that much of a connection. The ego of each of us does not show the other that how dependent on our relatives we are. Nitsa. So nowadays, where things have changed so much and moved away from how they naturally were, how important is communication between siblings today, Dr. Lakeman? Today, for now, there's no commitment, and there's no need, and there's no connection, and we're not sure that they'll even help me, these ties, connection with my siblings, because each of them has a family and children and a household of their own and a career and everything. Today, no. We barely send an SMS. And if we meet, then it's at weddings or the other way around. If I understand what you're saying that we are growing away from the natural ties that we used to have between siblings in the nuclear family, and there's no point in hoping that it'll change. The relations will only cool down and will feel less and less interdependent, so our discussion is even more important. Let's clothe in the situation. A house, two parents are listening to what you're saying, they understand the direction in which things are developing, where on the one hand, the most natural ties are cooling down. On the other hand, we're living in the world where that has become more interconnected, that the ties between people are closing us in this big network of interdependence, and we have three children at home under the age of 10, but you can already start talking to them, suppose. 5, 7, 9, something like that, three children, and we would like to build our home like a laboratory that will start weaving special ties between them that will adjust them to the world that is awaiting them in 5, 10, 20 years. Meaning, we want to start building the communication between them, not the way it naturally goes and cools down, but we want to build something else consciously. So first of all, in today's reality, if I could build the correct relations between brothers, as long as they're at home under me, what picture can I depict that would be considered successful? Dr. Lakeman, you have to depict to yourself human development. Since way back then and to this day, that development as a whole is based on the fact that the ego in each and every person is going and growing and developing, and to that extent, a person feels lonelier, alone, on his own, not dependent on others, not wanting to be dependent on others. If he has no choice, then okay, he needs them, but actually he doesn't want to. He wants to be only self-sufficient, relying only on himself, because the ego is the desire that develops simply pushes him away from others, and therefore I don't think that we have the ability to work against nature, against such an evolution. Of course, here and there is some kind of commitment, and it's not customary that it's not habitual, that just so I'll cause, suppose, harm to my relatives. But, you know, it's customary, it's not that. So we can't work against nature. Each of us, from one day to the next, from generation to generation, is becoming more egoistic, meaning not being able to feel any kind of closeness to their siblings, and not even to their parents. If once it was really holy, mom and dad, that I fear them, I bow to them, for me, they were everything. Today, the attitude is different. We all know. And all the more between siblings, and therefore, bringing people closer together won't happen. We won't go into this because, to begin with, it's destined to fail. And therefore, there's not much that we can do but to correctly explain the truth to everyone that exists and that comes from nature. And how can we nonetheless correctly use all the laws of nature and the ability to come closer? Upon this, upon the distancing, and nonetheless build such ties that will help us be human. Connections that are based on love, connection, mutual commitment, interdependence, and all these things that you'd like to talk to me about, I can't because it's not happening. Oh, no, it's obvious that it's not happening. What's crumbling away, we're familiar with it ourselves. The question is, how is it possible to start working with this figure? The figure that I understand is that my cute little children, I have to take into account that the more they grow, the bigger ego each of them will have, and it will disconnect them from the others. He won't want to take anyone into consideration but himself. Will it be expressed at the ages of 5, 7, 9, etc., Dr. Layton? Of course, because we live in a society in which each of these ages has a different environment. Once there was your home, your backyard, domestic animals, maybe a few neighbors, and that was his world. But, oh, so at home, I have 2, 3 young fellows that have, each of them has a big ego, and so do we have to talk to them about it for each of them to understand that they have a big ego, and that's why they can't be in some kind of mutuality with others? Should we put it on the table? At home? Should it be something that we talk about? Dr. Lightman, yeah, that we talk about, because it's a problem. It is a force that acts in everyone, and we have to learn how to work with it properly, correctly, because eventually the closeness between us, some kind of consent about mutual help between us can really help us in life. Nitsa, as you were talking, I felt that what the growing ego does is that it makes you lose your feeling of closeness, that we're close to anyone in this world, not to our siblings, to our parents, to no one. This feeling that you've described, I don't even know how to really feel it. I see how it's working. I suppose that children pay dearly for this feeling that you're describing, for this phenomena that of their growing ego, etc., where they're not connected anymore. But I'm asking myself further, how can I help siblings, my children, to feel closer together, that they belong to each other? Because for sure I know that this will give them a sense of confidence in life, tools to deal with life. when a person's, you know, alone, it's a disaster. Dr. Lightman, do you have some kind of incentive, some reason? As to how do you activate, operate this non-existing connection? Nitsa, my incentive as a parent is, first of all, that I want to give him a feeling that he belongs to something, that he is a part of something bigger. Dr. Lightman, so if we translate it into normal, simple language, you want to show him that he's gaining as a result of his connection with them. And he'd say, yeah, that he's not disconnected, that he has like this safety belt. Dr. Lightman, a certain profit gain as a result of his connection to his relatives. Okay, so we have to talk about it in the family. We have to somehow nurture it, maybe do some exercises that what the one can't do, the other can do instead of him. What one can do, two might, or three, or the entire family together. Meaning, we need to establish these kinds of exercises in the family that will teach us how good it is that we help each other, are aided by one another. Nitsa, is there some small exercise that I can do in my family with children of the ages 5, 7, 9, something like that, Dr. Layton? I don't know. Suppose today is Sunday. So we're all taking care of our brother Owen. And Owen, he as if needs our help. What we'll do instead of him. Monday, we take care of someone else. Tuesday, someone else. Something like that. It's not, you know, something that I'm really engaged in. But maybe to do something like that, we need to show how in different situations that mutual help, mutual support can be very effective, beneficial to the lives of each and everyone. Nitsa, by the way, when a parent, you know, he sees siblings fighting, he takes from her, she's beating him. You know, it's a broad subject, but suddenly I start understanding that there is some kind of connection at least. They're fighting, but there's contact. What's the right attitude and relation to quarrels between brothers? Dr. Lightman, the right attitude is that a quarrel isn't like any other quarrel with any stranger, that I break all of our ties and orient myself to the detriment of that person from now on. But here it's in a completely different framework. There are completely different boundaries that I nonetheless keep the connection. And it's like we punish children, that even though that on the one hand we punish them, on the other hand, we talk about correction, we talk about that we want to come closer and not move away as a result. Oh, and final question. You mentioned that between siblings there is a source of hate and a source of love. And from a broader point of view, the source of love and hate exists altogether between all two people, no matter who. It's like two opposites. They're very intense. They have great force, power. How do you create such a connection where you take these two opposites and build something out of them? What is the foundation for a connection between opposites, Dr. Lightman? Just like we came from one upper force, in our connection, we have to be drawn to that upper force. And only then can we find in our proper connection, the correct solution. This connection, will it also include the source of moving away and coming closer together, even though these are two opposite trends? Dr. Leishman, of course. Then we will understand how the egoistic nature is showing us all the time that we're distance from one another. This will force us to work on our connection. Oh, beautiful. Even though that each has a big ego that pushes him away from others, Dr. Leitman, this is called helpmate against him. Oh, and it can help. It can help how? What can this big ego that pushes us away from each other, how can it build a different kind of communication between us? Dr. Leitman, it shows us the state that we're in, that it's negative, and how can we correct it, complete it? Oh, and would it be true to say that just like the ego is pushing us away, and this is also the potential intensity of the future connection? Dr. Leitman, of course, that's why it's called helpmate against him. That even though that it seems that it's as if against, but it helps us actually connect. Oh, and so the connection that siblings will create today will be different than in the past. Dr. Leitman, let them act out that we hate each other, and how can we actually love each other? Let's play around with these two forces in each of us. Oh, and can you elaborate a bit about the game? We'll do it at home today. Can you define it, Dr. Leitman? That we need to act out to play how each of us rises above his ego and trying to come closer to the other in order to awaken in the other love instead of hate, and the measure to which they can be in that kind of competition, how successful can they be toward each other. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Unfortunately, our time's up, Dr. Leitman. Yeah, and from this point on, Nitza, who is an expert in communication, will build it for us. These exercises. Good luck. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
My new article on LinkedIn, when I look at them I see my fault. I look at the state that our nation should be in, as one man with one heart, and the state we are actually in, unwilling to recognize each other, and it pains me. When I look at our politicians, I see the state of our nation. Since they represent the people, their relationships reflect the relationships among the people, no one is friendly, no one even bothers to be politically correct. Look at the Knesset, our parliament, and see where we are, each with a knife behind the back or in the pocket, very similar to the days preceding the ruin of the temple. This is what unfounded hatred looks like, and we know where it is leading. Even worse, when I look at what is happening around the world, at all the hatred that prevails the world over, I know the ruin among them points to the ruin among us. When I see what is happening in Russia, Germany, or Poland, at the yelling and corruption that we see in every government, I see that I am the cause, I am the cause. I don't look at them and say, it's not so bad, we have that, too. No, I know that I am the reason it is happening to them, and I must be the reason that they will connect as one man with one heart through the example that our people should give them. I have no grievances against anyone but myself. I know that I, and the whole of the Jewish people, can tilt the world for better or for worse through our internal unity or separation. This is what our sages have always told us, this is what our history throughout the centuries has shown us, and only our obstinacy prevents us from recognizing the obvious truth. Michael Leitman, on Quora. How can cities help fix gangs and gang violence? We need to shift our focus to teaching and promoting the science about the purpose of human life. When we reach the understanding that we live in a single system that leads us to a life of perfection, absolute fulfillment, happiness and balance with nature, above our bodily life, then we will shift our concern from our bodies to our soul, that is, to what is outside of us. Then, instead of focusing on how to enjoy for personal benefit alone, we will think about how we can give to others and exit our egoistic way of life. We will appreciate and aspire to altruism, and by our general focus heading in a new giving direction, we will start feeling a completely different life. Instead of our current lives that we feel as several transient fleeting moments, we will feel nature in its unfiltered state, as an eternal and perfect flow of life. This is where we need to bring humanity, and especially the younger generation. Only thanks to the education and spreading of such wisdom, if done successfully, will we gain the ability to overcome the evil that exists in the world, including the negative phenomena in big cities, the force of the fist that is accepted among several youth in their ghettos. Based on a Q&A with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on September 9, 2006. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. On the Swing of Light and Darkness. The work in ascents and descents is given to us, from above, from the Creator, who pushes us, to this work. Sometimes he reveals a new will to receive to us, that was hidden inside and forces us, to fall, then he helps us, rise and explore our egoism in the upper light, in the will for bestowal. Ascents and descents alternately reveal increasing egoistic desires and an increasing desire for bestowal, so we get to know ourselves and the whole creation. We study our nature compared to the nature of the Creator and get an opportunity to advance toward Him by combining one with the other. All this comes as a result of ascents and descents. Therefore, a lot of preparation is needed. Patience is needed in order to go through many thousands of ascents and descents until the very end of correction where the highest ascent occurs, preceded by the lowest descent. The further we advance along the spiritual path toward correction, the deeper the descents and higher the ascents become. The Creator created one against the other for us, and we move forward studying His work as the advantage of light from darkness. It always happens only in such a contrasting form: the greater the darkness, then the more light is revealed. The time axis that leads us to the end of correction takes us along a sinusoid, sine wave from ever greater descents to ever greater ascents, where plus and minus always correspond to each other in absolute magnitude. Therefore, the whole work is comprised of accepting the descents, trying to annul oneself, to bend down, as it is said about King David, "O Lord, you hid your countenance and I became frightened." And in fact, it is unpleasant when each time weakness, indifference, and disappointment overcome us, in a new way. That is, new forms of lack of desire for spirituality are revealed. But then an ascent comes, gives us more strength, clarifies the past descent, and allows us to justify it. Therefore, it is necessary to learn one thing from the other. This study does not end until the very end of correction as the advantage of light out of darkness. The more darkness manifests itself in all its forms, the more light and elevation unfolds after it. And thus we get to know the light, the ascent, the Creator, the forms of nearing Him precisely in contrast with the forms of distance and darkness that were in the descent. It is said about Rabbi Shimon that he felt like just Shimon, a simple merchant in the market, an ordinary person. And then he realized that this descent was so significant that apparently after it, there would be a special, unusually high ascent. This is how we should try to hold ourselves through the ascents and descents, so that these two forms will support each other, because one is impossible without the other. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, July 7, 2021, Working in Ascents and Descents. an infinite moment. Maimonides, Rambam, writes that our world is below the axis of time and the spiritual world is above time. Therefore, as we move closer to spirituality, we suddenly begin to feel that 1 second is a very long time. We can fit many events into the period from the beginning of 1 second to its end. In modern technology, devices work at high frequencies and are able to process millions of impulses per second, which they could not do before. The spiritual world is way above modern technology and works at an infinite frequency. Therefore, there are no short moments in spirituality, and every moment there is infinite. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson July 7, 2021, Working in Ascents and Descents. Living for friends. Question: is it possible to teach a person that the team is more important than himself? Answer: we see this in examples of people who work in special teams, in submarines or with climbers. In general, those who are constantly faced with the question of survival depending on their connection in the team. They hold on to each other so much that they are ready to give their lives if their friends die. Question: in principle, are we talking about the fact that the whole process of upbringing is a change of an egocentric worldview to an altruistic one, even without going beyond our nature? Answer: yes, it is still within the framework of selfishness. Comment: but we can see that this does not work. No matter how much they tried to educate us, in kindergarten and in school. My response: they did not work on us, properly. A person can be made into such a being who will see his destiny only in serving its collective. This usually works in small, close groups when a person identifies his existence with the collective so much that if the collective dies, he also dies. He cannot exist without them. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, June 25, 2021. Garbage truck and no politics. Comment: Ann-Sophie Hermansson, formerly mayor of the Swedish city Gothenburg, retired from politics at the age of 56. She has connections everywhere and had a vast choice of positions, yet she chose to drive a garbage truck. My response: well done. She is a smart woman. Comment: her dad once told her, "Daughter, you need to have a real profession in life." Now she has an opportunity to use it. She says, "The responsibility is the same, just without meetings and phone calls." My response: this is a Swedish character. Comment: how do you like this decision of a person who was in politics, to suddenly leave everything behind? My response: this person understands that all this politics is such dirt and it needs to be washed away. Question: is this why she became a garbage truck driver? Answer: yes. Very good. What else do you need? You get up early, finish your working day early and you are free. Question: what is it that attracts people to politics, to all this dirt? Answer: this is petty egoism. Maybe it will be transformed into something somehow, but I cannot see this yet. Look how everyone tries to climb everywhere, and how much they fight and pay for it. Everything is around politics, money, the media, whatever you want. Question: what do you think? Is it possible to compare, to give a person a role in politics and give him the opportunity to work somewhere for a year, and then decide where he will go? I wonder what he would choose. Answer: there is nothing you can do, his egoism decides this. Question: are you saying that a person cannot escape from this? Answer: no, you cannot escape from fate. Question: what conclusion can we draw from this? Answer: the conclusion is very simple. Make your way into politics, but think about the fact that it would be nice to work on a garbage truck and clean up the city. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, May 31, 2021. Kabbalah's view on anti-Semitism. Question: You talk a lot about anti-Semitism and you even wrote the book From Chaos to Harmony, The Solution to the Global Crisis According to the Wisdom of Kabbalah. In addition, books have been published by some of your students, in particular, Anti-Semitism as a Law of Nature, a book for Jews but not only by Michael Brushteen and Time to Gather Stones by Mikhail Palatnik. What is this layer of books? Answer: these are books that talk about the application of Kabbalah in our world, about how we should influence our destiny and the destiny of humanity. Anti-Semitism is not a problem for the Jewish people. This is a problem of the world. Humanity does not understand the historical mission of the Jews and Kabbalah explains it. So, here we just take Kabbalah and try to find out what it says about our world. Anti-Semitism is not some kind of emotional attitude of the peoples of the world toward Jews. Kabbalah tells us where these people came from, why they are hated, why they are to blame for not being loved, why they do not fulfill their historical mission, etc. It completely overturns the attitude toward anti-Semitism and explains that this is a law of nature. From CabTV's Questions About Kabbalistic Books, October 22, 2019. Changing Subjective Attitudes. Question: what misconceptions, beliefs, that affect a person's life and prevent one from advancing to a higher cognition are characteristic of a modern person? Answer: we are examining the conceptual apparatus of the world from the point of view of our current consciousness. How can we approach this from the other side? Where is the second part of our consciousness, the opposite one? Kabbalah immediately begins to investigate the opposite attitude to an object, to an idea, to something that is happening. It tells a person, currently you are looking at everything from the point of view of your subjective feelings and egoistic concepts, which you received from nature, and you should adopt another point of view, an altruistic one. Will you be able to elevate yourself to the level where you as if get out of yourself to love your neighbor instead of yourself, to give instead of take, and so on? Change your attitude to the opposite one. What kind of world will you feel then? What solution will you find to this problem? Then compare these two solutions and see what you get. Perhaps you will find something in between them in which both these approaches, these solutions, will complement each other and lead you to a certain common denominator. From CabTV's Together About the Main Thing, September 2, 2018.